Now, let's get to our keynote speaker, Jason Benetti. Jason is a Chicago native, and in his eighth season as Chicago White Sox television play-by-play broadcaster, working alongside Steve Stone. He also works as a national broadcaster with Fox Sports on college football and basketball, NFL and Major League Baseball games, and he served as the voice of NBC Sports' MLB Sunday leadoff games beginning in 2022. He is part of the Cerebral Palsy Foundation's Just Say Hi campaign. He holds a bachelor's degree in broadcast journalism, economics, and psychology from Syracuse University, and a JD from Wake Forest University School of Law. Ladies and gentlemen, Jason Benetti.
Scott, thank you so much. Thank you all for having me and for being here. And I will say, you mentioned that I have a JD from Wake Forest. I have a friend who I was a roommate of in North Carolina when I was doing minor league baseball. And his grandfather asks him all the time, is Jason using the law degree yet? And so I had a notion, after you just made your announcement, if hypothetically Francis wins the next drawing for 5 years of registration in a hotel, I'm happy to take the bar and investigate. Sorry, Francis, I've literally never met you, and now you're like a punchline of the beginning of my speech. I apologize, I think. This is so cool to be here because it's a room full of curiosity, and that we need more of in our world. And so, of course, I thought, as expected, as the White Sox announcer, I would start with John Flaherty, the former Tigers catcher, for no apparent reason. I happened to do one of those Sunday leadoff games last year with John Flaherty. Every week, NBC would use the two analysts who were doing the games locally, and then I would parachute in as the play-by-play announcer. And so it was a very quick, sort of like shotgun wedding, get-to-know-you situation with the analysts, some of whom I'd known and some I didn't. And I had met John before. He was the analyst on the Yankees side. Jack Morris was the Tigers analyst. And I met John Flaherty for the first time at some point for a Sox-Yankees game, but I hadn't really gotten a chance to talk to him. And what I wanted to relate to John Flaherty, who hit seventh or eighth most of the time in his major league career and was like a fairly unremarkable in terms of memorable moments catcher, is that when I was a kid and he walked up to the plate for the Detroit Tigers, Nancy Faust on the organ would play. And this little boy with a bowl cut who kind of walked funny out in the bleachers would be like, oh, that's when Johnny comes marching home. You see what she did there was. And now I get paid for that, which is quite the boondoggle. But that was me sitting in the bleachers with my parents or my friends, and later on in my childhood, the White Sox were playing, maybe around the same time, the White Sox were playing Cleveland. And I don't know why I sat in the bleachers as much as I did as a kid. It seems like a place where you would like, there should be like age restrictions or like language restrictions or things. We're sitting by a group of guys who guaranteed have an above average amount of old style memorabilia in their homes. And Albert Bell was in left field. And these guys just keep yelling, Joey, Joey. And I don't think I cursed at the time. I was wearing like a bum sweatshirt, right? So I don't think I did. But I said to my dad, like, what the hell are they? That's Albert Bell. His name's not Joey. And of course, there wasn't the internet then, which makes me feel old, and like, the scholars who I was just sitting with are tuning me out because I said there wasn't an internet. Sorry, guys, I was trying to be cool for a little while, but I'm not. And so we're like, I don't know why they're yelling Joey. And of course, we didn't want to talk to them because, you know, the aforementioned memorabilia they likely have in their homes. They seemed a little more rugged than I was back in the day. And we were like, why is that happening? Why are they calling him Joey? And it turned out that Albert was going by Joey before 1990, I guess, in the minors. His middle name is Jawan, J-O-J-U-A-N. But we found this out by calling the producer for the Dan Patrick radio show, as I recall. It's a bit of an apocryphal story, but I do remember, I don't know if we learned the information from doing that, or we just called and they were like, you're all idiots. But it was some version of that. I have all of these memories of going to White Sox games, and that's why it's so cool to be here today, because baseball has become my life and my livelihood. Like Robin Ventura hit all of those grand slams, like 18 in his career, and I was in the bleachers for, I don't know, three of them. He hit two in one game or something like that, back-to-back games, something like that. I have these foggy memories, and then other very strong memories of the smell of grilled onions on the concourse at White Sox games. And it was, people, I think, thought I was a nutcase because when I first got the job, people were like, how was the first game you did? And I said, the ballpark smells the same. I said, this is the guy who's replacing Hawk Harrelson? My parents and I went on a baseball road trip, and one of my early baseball memories is the fact that Skydome then only had McDonald's and Tim Hortons to eat, which, like, it's not that much of a range. We have like churros in Chicago. I want something different. That same road trip, we went down, we obviously were directionally challenged, but we went down to Texas. I have an aunt and uncle in Texas, and I remember like five people being carted off at ballpark at Arlington because it was about 1,000 degrees. But baseball brings you all of these memories, which usually they're very sticky, and they're usually not offensive to random people in the crowd, but there is one memory that I have. I went, as you do, you drive down from high school and you go and you see a White Sox game or whatever it is, and the White Sox were playing the Twins, and I don't remember which one of us it was a group of like five of us. One of us turned around and looked, and there was like a little girl who looked enough like Michael Kadire that one of us took a picture, and we have been, like a girl in a Twins hat, who looked enough like Michael Kadire that this has been a running joke for, I think, like 25 years now, approximately. We still love Michael Kadire in that fantasy football league. So, hi, I'm Jason Benetti, and I'm here evidently just to riff about Remember That Guy. I also have never played a game of organized baseball in my entire life. And I kind of want to play once just to see what the players would say, but baseball is always gonna live on in my memories. I swear, and I don't know how many people in this room would certify this sentence about themselves, but there are some days where I would like to be able to reserve some space in my brain for other knowledge. Like just a cordon off, like police tape, like cerebral police tape. But there's always like a neuron or two clinging to some fact that really is not applicable basically anywhere but this room. When we used to play wiffle ball, I grew up on the south side of Chicago for the first 7-8 years. We were 32nd in Hamilton, and then we moved to the suburbs in Homewood, and we would play wiffle ball in the backyard. My dad was like a really amateur carpenter, so he made a strike zone that we'd put behind a plate, and in wiffle ball, you just have to like throw the ball to hit the strike zone. It was the precursor to robo-umpires, I guess. But I have this very distinct memory. I have a friend who I grew up with, and we've lost touch. I think he's in Oregon right now. His name's Andy Marshall, and I know his brother Brendan watches Sox games. He he follows on Twitter. But Andy Marshall, my elementary and middle school friend, when we were playing backyard wiffle ball and we were doing batting stances and all that stuff, he used to always pretend to be, when he was pitching, Matt Whiteside. He had 9 career saves. I looked it up the other day as I was getting ready for this. Matt Whiteside had a 5.23 ERA and 9 saves. So why would be the question? And that all was just a test, that last anecdote. I have now confirmed, I'm told yes, this is the only room in the world where that gets a laugh. And God love all of us for that. Let's get to how we might be able to best spend 20 minutes or so. As Scott mentioned, I'm play-by-play announcer for the White Sox. My 8th year doing it. I do MLB games for Fox, NBC, Peacock last year. I used to work for ESPN. And one of the projects that I got to be a part of at ESPN that was just phenomenal was the alternate telecast that we used to do for Sunday Night Baseball and the Home Run Derby and assorted games here and there, our StatCast show with Eduardo Perez and Mike Petriello. We did this for a couple years until we got replaced by K-Rod. I didn't write it on my screen, hold for booze. But now I know that if I'm ever in a similar place, just take a moment, let everyone enjoy their cheesecake, and then whatever happens, happens. Our whole goal with that show was to only put things on the screen that mattered. That's it. And that's not easy to do on a regional baseball telecast on a night-to-night basis. There are people who are not as deep dive-ish in baseball who watch games. Not every fan is like us in the room. And I'm with hubris, including myself, with you all who are way more esteemed researchers and baseball knowledge hunters than I even am. But that telecast was one of the great collaborations of my entire life, and I miss it dearly. It's one of the things that I left ESPN, and really it hurt to not be able to do it again. Now, obviously, StatCast was murdered in cold blood before I left anyway, but we weren't going to do it anyway. So, Mike Petriello, we all know Mike Petriello?
Sure.
Some of us know Mike Petriello? There was like sparse applause. Just by hand, the people who know Mike Petriello and don't like him. You in the back? No, I'm kidding. What's that?
I think he's a Dodger fan.
He's a Dodger fan. Yeah, which makes him... It's a Saber Mad Lib. Mike is a StatCast researcher and MLB.com writer, and he is an absolute genius, and he is one of the kindest people in American history. But on that show, we decided, we're not going to put .255 batting average if it doesn't say something about somebody. With Luis Arraez, we might put that on the screen because it matters to who he is. But it really was one of the greatest collaborations I've ever been a part of. Mike, in the week leading up to the game, would churn out just reams of information and hit us with all this stuff, and we would work to distill it together. And Eduardo Perez, how many people know Eduardo Perez, have met him? One of the kindest people and most curious former baseball players I have ever encountered. That show very easily could have become nerds on one side, player on the other side. And that's an easy trope for people to do in television. It wasn't that. Eduardo was always looking for more research, more information, more reason to be able to tell a story that other people just wouldn't tell. Our producer, Andy Jacobson, was the guy who culled it all and distilled it and had the graphics people working on you know, individual graphics that had a different slot for every player. If his sprint speed is really important, we're going sprint speed on the first lower third graphic that comes in when the batter is up for the first time. Whatever it might be that makes that person interesting, that was on the graphic. And it was very fortunate for us that the first ever game we did as a group cooperated. It was just down the road here in Chicago, 2018, when the Cubs and Rockies just couldn't quit each other in the wild card game. They were just like, oh, it's not going to work out. No, let's stay. We might be able to make it. No. And then it was 13 innings of that, and it was 1-1, and then finally the Rockies ended up scoring a run, and they won 2-1. It was 4 minutes after midnight when Scott Hoberg threw the final pitch of that game. And let's just check out where the room is, and the Cubs lost. You don't have to. I just wanted to see where everybody's emotions were today. That seems like a very cordial group, but I wanted to see if there were small pockets of hate. Because you can only have kindness if it's a response to something, right? So we do the game. And after the game, it was one of those moments, and I'm sure a lot of you have had moments in your life when you've worked with other people and you just said, this is right. What we just did is right. And I don't say that out of hubris. I say it out of pride that there was nobody trying to get their hits in, nobody trying to one-up the other. No person in the production truck was trying to just say, like, let's do this just because. There was always a reason for 13 innings, and it just hummed. It was great. The only thing that wasn't great is our esteemed producer, Andy Jacobson, who's now the Sunday Night Baseball producer, selected a place for us to go eat that was like 45 minutes the wrong way from the city. We're like, Andy, you did 13 innings of brilliant television and you can't get us a salad on the way to downtown? Joke. What a joke. We were at that dinner at whatever, we were in like Gray's Lake, I don't know, Manitoba. I don't know where we were. But we talked about television and baseball so deep into the night. You know in college when like poli-sci majors meet other poli-sci majors for the first time? And they're just up all night talking about nonsense. That was us. I seriously did not go to bed until 5 o'clock in the morning. It was this wonderful triumph, and the people at ESPN, Phil Orlins, the coordinating producer, said, go be smart. Go do television that is smart. And it doesn't happen very often, and it made me feel whole, really. And I bring it up because if you, I don't know, does this move? Can I like... This is not going to go very long, but, you know, if you've seen pieces on me, like, as I walk around, I, like, don't walk like a normal human being. You've seen that, right? As I walk up, I have cerebral palsy. I don't even know what a normal human being is. I had a boss once say to me, I had said that I felt like yelling at me wasn't a good idea and that I should get more respect, and he said, respect for Jason Benetti or respect for normal human beings? So he sucks. It was more recent than you'd think. I say I don't walk like a normal person because that guy said that. But look, I have cerebral palsy. I have this gait that sort of like bounces me around the world, and I get very interesting reactions from people. I can't walk straight. I don't look directly at a TV camera. Although, I don't even need side view mirrors. One of the great features of cerebral palsy, if you're wondering, feature, not a bug, somebody taps me on the shoulder and I like flinch, and then people think I'm scared of them, which is great for first impressions when you're already like, wow, what a warm, welcoming person that I just... But like in middle school, it was kind of like, I didn't even understand it, right? It's called spasticity, but I didn't even know what that was because my parents didn't want to treat me any differently than other people. So it was just like, yeah, go be in the world and whatever happens, happens. But it's called spasticity. And when somebody taps you, if you have CP in a certain version of it, you just like flinch, and that just happens. So it's sort of like firing Pez out of a Pez dispenser for people. They just want to like tap you and see if it happens again. It does happen again. Yes, that is a thing. So here is the very short version of how I ended up calling baseball games. I used to play the tuba. Anybody a tuba player? Okay. Did you play the sousaphone?
Yes, I did.
Okay. I didn't, because it's a murder weapon for me. So the band director knew this, because if you put the sousaphone, you wrap the sousaphone around me, I'm going to do like the I'm a Little Teapot routine, and it's going to tip me over, and my brain will pour out, right? So his initial reaction was to put the tuba on a stand at halftime of these football games. So I would go march. This is the weirdest microphone ever. I would go march, and I would just like stand there and march while the band in like planetary orbit around me would help me make letters. So I was like the bottom of the F and the bottom of the H, the bottom of the I. It was a wide array of things that I did. So it was really bizarre, actually, for people to watch, because somebody would run the tuba out on a stand, and then I would go march. So Mr. Jastrow, the band director at Homewood Flossmoor High School, who is a wonderful, marvelous human being, decided that I was going to go upstairs to the top of the bleachers and announce the sets for the band. So he put me behind a microphone for the first time. It was like, coming up next, Wheels of a Dream for Ragtime, you know, whatever it might be. At the Crossroads by Robert Copeland, or whatever it was. So that got me on the air. And it turned out, based on the response of some random guy that I didn't even know, and I don't even know who said this, but some guy, after I did it the first time, was like, oh, you're kind of good at this. And it struck me that, like, oh, I'm good at something. That's better than not. So I go to the high school radio station, and I sign up for the high school radio station, and we had these teachers, Mr. Comstock and Ms. Tipton, who taught us how to do radio and taught us how to write scripts and how to get on the air and do things with standards. And that created something in my mind of, hey, I want to go to Syracuse University and become a sports announcer. So I do that, and I become the tyrannical leader of the sports radio station in Syracuse. When you put somebody with a disability who has a little bit of a temper in charge of other 20-year-olds, there are systems, there are quizzes. It's not great. It's not great. I was a tremendous leader. So I go to Syracuse University, I do all that stuff, and I get to do games, and then I go to do minor league baseball. And at every turn, there was some great person, somebody who vouched for me, this professor at Syracuse University who's always believed in me, this guy at Time Warner Cable in Syracuse who got me on TV doing football for the first time, and all of these play-by-play announcers like Ian Eagle and Bob Costas and Sean McDonough who have listened to my tape and really advocated for me. And at every turn, there's also just a jackass who doesn't really understand. Pardon my language, but, you know, I get frustrated sometimes. No, I don't. I just like doing it for effect. In college, I had a guy that worked at the radio station with me, and he didn't like one of the assignments that I gave him. So, you remember Instant Messenger, AOL Instant Messenger? Yeah, oh yeah, big. One of the developers for AIM is here. Phenomenal. You'd put up an away message and it would say like, I'm at the gym, or like it would be a quote or something like that, right? Well, this one kid, he didn't really like me, and his away message at one point was, when I screwed him out of some game that he wanted to do, was, at least he'll be a nice story for somebody's magazine one day. Oh, don't say that. He's gonna remember that in 20 years. And when I became a story in somebody's magazine, I was tempted to send it to him. But I have mellowed. Scott Carter knows that I've mellowed. It's a shock that I've been invited here today. Scott Carter is phenomenal at what he does, and he's a really good person. But when I was in minor league baseball, I had something of a temper, and it was in part, and I'm not making excuses, but I want to tell you the story. I had one manager who I was filling in on an Auburn Double Days series in Auburn, New York. They have a great prison up there. I was filling in, and this manager, I got on the bus. He had never met me before. He said, "Hey, Kaiser Sose." Now we know who in the room has watched The Usual Suspects. I'm going to ruin The Usual Suspects for you, but it's been 35 years, and you're not allowed to watch Spacey anyway. So, Kaiser Sose is the villain in the movie. He's an informant at first, and he's got a disability. But then at the end of the movie, his gait turns normal, and he starts walking straight into a car and disappears. So he's like the guy. Well, this manager not only called me Kaiser Sose, but had some of the players rent the movie so we could watch it on the bus. Cool. I also had a scout ask me in the Myrtle Beach Pelicans press box once. I had never met this guy either. He comes up to me and goes, "Hey, what do you got, polio?" That was his hello. Scott mentioned the Just Say Hi campaign. That's not how you meet somebody. Is, "Hey, you got polio?" Anyway, Scott and I actually shouted at Scott once outside the Durham Bulls press box because they moved the radio booth down the first base line at Durham Bulls Athletic Park, and I may or may not still have in my email drafts a petition to International League President Randy Mobley that I wrote up after that to try to protect our radio booths. It was not Scott's fault. I was an asshole. I appreciate Scott having me and looking past how mean I was that day. Those are all stories to tell you really why the StatCast show mattered to me so much. Because these people, as I navigate the world, there are a lot of people who mean very well, right? Like the flight attendant who asked me 3 times if I can handle the exit row door, while literally the people across from me are Estelle Getty and Betty White, basically. "Can you handle it?" And then they're like, "Yes, these ladies who are 106, obviously, in an emergency, will take care of us. They look like superheroes." I get a lot of reactions that are bizarre, right? And so I realized through those StatCast shows why I bristle when somebody says he's 3-10, he's having a rough season, and he's got a 2.90 ERA. I hate when people say Joey Gallo's not worth any money when he's got a 121 OPS plus, even though he's hitting 199. Because when you're just the first thing people see about you, it's reductive and awful and discounts so many qualities in human beings. Our research, your research, our advanced stats let us appreciate everybody for the sum, whatever, large scale, small scale beauty they bring to the game. And it's why I also think some people who are anti-stats find stats scary or worrisome, is because of the idea of predestiny, right? That this player is just, because we have a stat for it, they're just going to always be this. We all want to flout the numbers, right? We all love numbers in here, but we all want to flout the numbers as well. We want to be different than whatever fate is supposed to bring us. The odds of me becoming an announcer are infinitesimally small, and I've had great friends and great mentors and all of that, but if I walked around every day as a teenager with the probability of becoming an announcer around my neck, it wouldn't have happened. I would have lost confidence. I wouldn't have believed in myself. And so I guess what I'm saying, as we watch baseball, we kind of have a choice. We can use it to figure out stats, research, knowledge, to figure out what makes players incapable of something. And I hear enough, you know, the scout who's like, "You got polio?" What? Just assuming something. But we assume something about players based on their numbers at all times. And really, the numbers at their very best bring out the beauty of each individual player and what makes them unique and what makes them somebody who's better than expected when they were 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 or whatever age it was. And this really is what my whole life has been founded on, right? It doesn't mean I'm great at everything, but if you discount me on the whole because of the first thing you think about me, you're missing something. If we discount any single one of you because of the first thing we see about you, your hair, your ears, your nose, your shirt, whatever it might be, but then port that into stats, if it's the very first stat you see about somebody and you discount this person as he's never going to do X, you're missing the human evolution that can become such a beautiful, joyful, developmentally enlivening experience. And so, thank the world this place exists, because the curiosity we all found as kids, whatever your version of Joey Bell or When Johnny Comes Marching Home Again or the drunk guys in the bleachers, whatever that is for you, whatever curiosity you found, you're here for a reason, and it's because you love finding what's unfound about somebody, about something. And that makes us all closer together. And in this world, that is the best thing we can do with our time. I know that's a very stark sentence, but I truly believe the best thing we can do with our time is to figure out what makes us all closer together. And as we do research on baseball, and as we learn these details, and as we find these small flecks about a person, we learn that they're just a lot like us. And in a world that feels quite divided quite often, to have all of you sleuths and detectives and baseball lovers and people who just hunt to find what makes us similar and all human, I am honored to be here, and I'm honored to share this time with you. So thank you for having me, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of your weekend.